Hello, and welcome back to Even More News, the first and only news podcast. My name's Katie Stoll.
Prove it.
Here's my license.
Hello. Oh, it says right here that's not your name.
It's Kathleen. What's your name?
Cody Johnston.
That's right, it is.
Kathleen.
Kathleen Johnstoll. Mm-hmm. Guys, I want to wish you all a very, very happy National Frozen Yogurt Day.
Finally.
Gosh, one of my favorite treats.
I've been waiting for this day.
Have you?
Yeah.
When was the last time you had frozen yogurt? That's right. It's been so long, but today's the day.
Yep.
After this, we're going to get us a nice little frosty treat. Did you know that yogurt was first invented over 4,000 years ago in the Middle East and India, and then slowly made its way across the world over the centuries? But it wasn't until the 1970s that the brilliant idea of freezing yogurt and offering a healthier alternative to ice cream, yeah, created the taste sensation we love today.
Yeah.
You didn't know that?
I don't know that.
Fascinating point.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of anything, something else. That's right, Even More News listeners. Even More News is brought to you by Skillshare, and Skillshare is offering Even More News listeners 2 months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. To sign up, go to skillshare.com/news. For some reason, we thought that this was going to be a light news week.
Mm.
It's never a light news week, but, you know, we didn't think there'd be crazy stories.
I mean, we knew, like, impeachment stuff.
But we knew the answer, what was going to be happening there.
We knew what was
going
to happen there, exactly.
You know, we knew that the caucus was happening, but we anticipated it being pretty straightforward. It turns out it's been a crazy week. It's been a crazy week. But at the beginning of the week, we were like, oh, this would be a perfect opportunity to invite Ollie from Philosophy Tube on to have a conversation about Brexit and stuff that's going on over in England. So we have that for you guys today.
It's true.
But before we do that, we're going to quickly run through some of the stuff that's been happening this week, because
that'll be easy.
That will be easy, and it is our job.
Oh.
So we already did a big Iowa caucus episode on worst year ever.
We might do a second one.
We probably will have to because things have been crazy. But there's been some updates since we recorded, and the reporting was still at 62% at that point, and it wasn't clear what was going to happen. Do you want to tell the people what's happening now?
What's happening now?
Yeah, because okay. It might be confusing, actually.
Well, yeah. So the aside from all the wild clusterfuck, that was the day of.
Unbelievable.
So the tally has been slowly being reported. A lot of precincts and counties complaining that they've had the results ready for days, but no one will accept their results anyway. So they've been trickling in. And last night, the final tally started coming in from Iowa 1, various districts, a lot of the bigger places, Des Moines, things like that. And satellite caucuses, and then the lead that former mayor Pete had started to disappear when Iowa 1 came in. I believe the difference between their delegates was 18, and then it went down to 4.
So right now, at 97% reporting, Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg both have 11 delegates. Pete has 26.2% of the vote. Bernie has 26.1%.
So, yeah. So also, I think an important thing is when that 26.2, 26.1%, that's not the percentage of the vote. It's the percentage of the state delegate estimation.
Right.
The percentage, which is then translated into the actual delegates they get, which you said was 11.
Yes.
So there are several different numbers that one could report about the Iowa caucus. The one being focused on by the media is this SDE,
mm-hmm.
And that's the one where if you look at the math, you're like, oh, well, Pete won. If you look at literally any other metric, he did not. Obviously, popular vote, Bernie's winning. And you said the delegate count, the actual delegate count that they will get is even. And
don't they get a chance to steal them when they get to the caucus?
I mean, yeah, the whole convention.
The DNC convention.
The convention is a whole other story. I'm sure we'll do a thing about just that process
when we get there.
So last night, more results came in, and it became even more clear that even the number that the media was focusing on, for some reason, was actually not the former Pete victorious, despite him claiming that the day of when...
And the days after, let's be fair.
And the days after when the results were not in seems a little Trumpian, I don't know. So basically, this morning, Pete's campaign called the Iowa Democratic Party and complained about the way that these satellite caucuses were being tallied and the way these delegates were, the math, how it was being divvied up. And so then Tom Perez announced that they were re-canvassing the entire thing.
Meaning recounting everything?
Yeah, so for some reason, because Pete's campaign complained, I think it's very funny because it's a perfect bookend to the poll leading up to the last poll leading up to the caucus that was pulled because Pete's campaign complained. Yeah. And we're bookending that. But the bottom line is that he won the whole time. He had more votes.
He has more votes. They're still trickling in the satellite caucuses, which Bernie does really well in, because he focused there. He spent a lot of time, and it's, you know, more of the marginalized communities.
Yeah, I mean, all the
people,
Muslim caucuses went for him.
Right.
The multiracial working class coalition that he's been building.
Those are still trickling in and will likely put him over, if not at least can maintain this tie of delegates. But if you look at the different metrics, I mean, he undoubtedly won the popular and is probably winning this part as well.
Yeah.
He is winning it. Bernie made a statement today about it, but a reporter asked, quote, "Mayor Pete's been declaring a win for days now. Why should people believe your victory speech over his?" Bernie, "Because I got 6,000 more votes," which pretty much says it.
Yeah. Where I come from, that means you won.
But,
I believe,
you know, I think what's happening here is it's being drawn out, and then Pete can maintain the claim that he was victorious in Iowa, and hopefully that helps propel him in New Hampshire, which I believe is next week, correct?
Yeah.
So that will be interesting to watch.
Yeah, because Iowa is mostly, it's narrative-based. The results aren't like, they're important because a candidate can say, look, I won, or look, I got second place, or look, my appeal, and then you have momentum going into the next primary. And the media has very interestingly drawn it out as much as possible, focusing on perhaps the least important number of it all in order to deprive somebody of something.
And there's lots more that can be talked about. We've done that a lot this week. There's other things to discuss. We'll probably have more to say in future episodes. But for now, let's feel good about where we are.
Yeah, I feel great about
also,
it.
Also, that was just Monday. And then on Tuesday was the State of the Union, which truly blew my mind as we were spending all day waiting for these results to come in. And then there's a State of the Union that night. And we're not going to spend too much time talking about it because it was your typical Trumpian speech, you know, rally against immigrants.
A little more so, a lot of guests.
A lot of guests, showy.
A lot of,
things to make him look good. At the end, Republican senators started chanting 4 more years, which is ghoulish. Mm. He awarded the dying Rush Limbaugh the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Okay, real quick, that's another tangent news story that broke.
Yeah.
Rush has got cancer.
Oh, yeah. Rush got
it's
cancer.
An interesting conversation to be had about that, you know. I mean, especially off of last week's conversation that we had talking about Kobe, but like, how do you deal with all of the ghoulish things about somebody while they're also doing this
especially a lot
horrific
of them,
tragedy.
A lot of them literally have to do with like people with illnesses and smoking and like his whole catalog of greatest hits.
Oh,
are,
God.
Like,
he's truly abhorrent.
Like, the idea, like, it's especially interesting because imagine what Rush Limbaugh would say about Rush Limbaugh. You know? It would be abhorrent. He said so many terrible things. It's very interesting to me just because, like, it's a perfect cap on, like, a Trump era.
Let's talk about some of them. Yeah.
Oh.
I saved this Twitter thread just for this. Look, let me put it to you this way. The NFL all too often looks like a game between the Bloods and the Crips without any weapons. There, I said it.
There, he said it.
Take that bone out of your nose and call me back. Something he said to a black woman caller on his program. Black Americans are 12% of the population. Who the hell cares? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean,
I believe at one point he's referring to the Clinton's dog, the first dog. I forget the name of that dog. And then it was like, there's only one dog in the White House, and it was a picture of Chelsea Clinton as a young little girl. Yeah, he is poisoned politics in a pretty significant way over the years with the things that he says. And he has sort of been a model of a lot of the right-wing media we see today.
Absolutely.
I know that, like, Ben Shapiro literally has talked about how he was a Rush baby. Like, he grew up listening to Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, here's a good one.
You can tell. Ooh.
There are more American Indians alive today than there were when Columbus arrived or at any other time in history. Does this sound like the record of a genocide?
Oh, my God. That's like, well, that's like classic Shapiro stuff.
It is. That's, like, I mean, that's exactly why I was like, yo.
Yeah, it's very interesting that he is sort of like Limbaugh has, not that he created it, but really fostered it.
Yeah.
And cultivated it and influenced all these people who are now saying just as, if not more, ghoulish things, and so uncivil while also calling for civility and like all just like the mess
absolutely.
That we're experiencing and seeing. And I think it's really interesting that he has now received this award.
Interesting. It's a big fat troll.
Yeah,
it's a big fat troll of all of us.
It's a, it's art, is what it is.
And I'm sure we will talk more about this in the future because he's just been diagnosed. But it does put to the test what I was saying last week. It just does.
Yeah, it does.
Also, at the State of the Union, Nancy Pelosi made waves by tearing up the speech that
Boo.
The president gave performatively.
Boo.
Cody is like, all right. A couple things to say here. Before I get to hearing what I want to say, we're not Nancy Pelosi fans here. Obviously, he just was booing. But it really got my goat to see, I don't know why this would be shocking, how many people are appalled at her tearing up some paper and don't give a fuck that, you know, oh, he just gave Rush Limbaugh the presidential medal, whatever, or all the things that he does. He's a rapist. We can
yeah, it's
keep
a joke.
Going.
We're
it's
living
a
in a joke.
Joke.
Yeah.
But yeah, Nancy
Wholly
Pelosi.
Of course, they're
is a polarizing in her own way, good and the bad. And then you saw something about how she pre-tore the paper.
I mean, well, that's a whole other thing. Yeah. So, yeah, during the speech, you can see her and like. This has sort of been in a lot of like right wing media and like New York Post and websites like that. But like, yeah, during the speech, you can see her like 30 minutes before it's over. She takes the speech and she like puts it a little behind the desk underneath and you can see her tear the edges.
Well, I kind of get that. She's an older woman. You don't want to try to do it. You don't. What you don't want to do if you're going to do that is to start it and not be able to tear it.
That is true. But like, it just speaks to like, yeah, the performative nature of it. Like 30 minutes, is like, I'm going to do this. This is going to be the moment. We're going to get a gif out of this. And A, it like, it creates what you just described, an ability for these clowns to make a big deal out of it and claim like, oh, she did this. She's like the civility. Matt Gaetz is like trying to like get her arrested, like saying
unbelievable,
like all the nonsense that you would expect from that. While she's also like clapping during the speech and like
standing up at certain
yeah,
right.
like voting for certain things and like supporting some of his like it's a perfect example of the Trump era. I think the Matt Gaetz thing specifically too. Where on one side you have the Matt Gaetzes of the world who are doing their best to try to get into the president's good graces, but also pretend like he's good.
Yeah.
They're pretending like he is not an obvious crime guy. And it's hard, getting harder and harder and harder to do that. And that's very funny. But also then the Pelosi thing is like, oh, you're pretending that you tried. Like, it's just like, what do you get out of the tearing of the paper?
Well,
it gives
I think
him, it gives him
I,
more
I'll tell you
and,
what I think that we didn't really talk about his speech. We talked about that.
I know.
So it
no,
kinda,
exactly.
It, but in a way, you're like, okay, well, it kind of detracts from the power of his stupid fucking speech.
But it just turns into like this weird like culture like meaningless story. So like spending
I mean,
a day
I agree.
On like
I think
she ripped the papers, whether like regardless of what side you're on. Who's talking about the speech? Not that, like,
I mean, I agree, but I am also like, yeah, let's not talk about that fucking speech.
Sure.
That racist pile of shit speech.
There you go. Fair.
We don't have to give him any sort of.
Well, she didn't have to invite him. Like, you know, the speech didn't have to exist. Like, we didn't have to do it at all.
That would have been a whole other huge distraction from all the other million things that are going on. I mean, you're right. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Like, that is a whole other wave of outrage and in the midst of our primaries and caucuses and impeachment trial, which we're about to get to.
Exactly.
That seems like maybe it wouldn't have been.
Maybe it would have just forgotten the whole thing. He would have fired off a tweet and been like, oh, I didn't want to do it anyway. And then it would have been over.
That's not what it would have been.
And I don't want to get too down on it, because it's not important and we shouldn't spend so much time even talking about
it. No, we're
going to
move on right now.
Thank goodness.
Because on Wednesday, again, that was only Tuesday, to the shock of absolutely no one, Trump was acquitted in his impeachment trial. Some waves were made, though, however, when Mitt Romney took the bold move of voting guilty on abuse of power.
This is so funny to me.
Yeah.
Not
obstruction of justice. Just
right. So that, like, because I'm, and I realize, like, there's an element of the impeachment where it's like, and we've talked about how maybe it would be great if you included a lot of other things he's done, really investigate his crimes and his immoral and unethical acts, and not have this circle, like, focus on Joe Biden's son.
Yeah.
We've talked about that. And so there's an element of, like, I expect them to acquit him. You expect it to not matter. I think it might actually affect his, like, actual support, because he was impeached. Like,
I hope it does.
He's going to play it in the way he's going to play it, but I think it will actually have a negative effect. It's sort of an expected outcome that we've been talking about impeaching him for years,
and
it's finally
always
happened, and it's sort of like
we always knew what was going to happen when we did too,
right? So a lot of my energy and focus has been on who's going to be the next president,
yeah,
especially amidst Iowa going on, all this kind of stuff. So I sort of like heard that Mitt Romney did the vote. I was like, okay, well, all right, I can't wait for, like, the resistance to claim him and then Republicans to shun him and, like, the thing that you expect to happen.
Yeah.
And so I, like, made a note and I moved on. I didn't realize until last night that he did only vote
for one of them.
One of
yeah.
them. Yeah.
I lost it.
I started laughing. I lost
I'm
my
sure
shit.
You did.
It's so fucking funny.
But he is.
That he only did one of them.
But he probably won't
do both.
There's a good chance this doesn't cost him a re-election.
Well, his state doesn't like Trump.
He's got a lot of his bases in the
Sure, but also he's like a rich man. He'll be fine. But like,
oh, yeah, I'm not worried about Mitt Romney.
But I think part of his vote was based off of, like, well, a lot of people in my state don't like him. Like, even though it's a red state.
Sure.
You know, Evan
It's less
McMullen
brave than it's making.
And got a lot of the vote there.
Everyone's like, oh, it's so brave. It's so brave.
It is not brave.
A little less brave. a lot less brave than that's being made out to be. But also,
he only did one. It's so good.
Dude, it's your job.
Yeah.
It's your the bare minimum is to be awake enough to say, like, oh, yeah, the very blatant thing I see before me is is happening. Donald Trump Jr. immediately posted a meme on Instagram of Mitt wearing, it kind of does look like ladies' jeans. I won't deny that. Who cares? But it says, mom jeans, because you're a pussy. That's the kind of political dialogue that we need right now. Mom jeans, because you're a pussy.
Okay.
I'll say, that's not a pussy move. I mean, it's kind of a pussy because he didn't vote for both of the things.
Sure.
Also, pussies are great.
Pussies are strong.
Pussies are strong and wonderful, warm and inviting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think Don's, good compliment there, buddy.
Anyway, it's just all, what a ridiculous week. That's half of the week.
Yeah, it's too much.
It's too much. And then, just so you guys are aware, we do have more debates tomorrow on Friday, the night that you're listening to this. There are presidential town halls all week.
Mm-hmm.
New Hampshire primaries next week.
Yeah, a lot of people, a lot of moves happening very soon in terms of that. Like, a lot of people pulling ads. Letting some staff go, canceling events in certain areas.
We're going to see some dying off of this.
Some people, stopping and picking their endorsable candidate, which will have.
And then before we pivot to an ad break and then our interview with Ollie, I just wanted to share one story that most of you probably haven't seen. But apparently the majority of tracked migrants that we have sent back to El Salvador have been killed. Quote, a huge percentage of migrants and asylum seekers from El Salvador who were deported by the United States have been killed, raped, or tortured after returning home, according to a new report by Human Rights Watch. The humanitarian group followed 200 migrant cases over a two-year period and found that 138 of those deported were murdered, and the rest were either raped or tortured, often by the same gangs they were originally fleeing from. Yeah, that's why they come here. That's what they put on their asylums when they're seeking asylum. That's what they mention. That's what they talk about. That's what we've known. This is not a surprise, but it is a heartbreak.
What everybody said would happen to these people if they were sent back.
Yeah. Anyway, man, I really brought the energy down here.
My gosh,
but I think it's an important story, and I think that we've been so focused on our election and everything that's going on that we forget about the things that are happening every day. And this isn't new to the Trump administration, but it's definitely worse. So let's keep that in mind as we lose our minds when we are fighting with each other online about which candidate to support.
Can't wait for that.
More
of that. Fights online.
Fight,
about
fight,
candidates
fight,
that
fight,
we
fight,
prefer.
Fight, fight. First, fight, we're gonna online. Take a little break. Then we'll be back. And
then we'll say, welcome back.
Okay, be right back.
Hey, it's advertisement time, or advertisement. Yep, just a little fun marketing pun for you. Learn that and more by checking out Skillshare, an online learning community of already millions of students enjoying thousands of classes covering dozens of topics, like marketing, photography, video editing, photo editing, productivity. It's easy to use, and for 2 months, it's free.
I love free things, because it's less than paying any amount of money.
Exactly. Pay less than any amount of money for 2 months. Learn something like animation or something. I used Skillshare, and now we have adorable mascots like Snoofle Doofle and the soon-to-be-revealed Professor Seeds von Greasy.
Thanks, Skillshare.
Yeah.
So here's some good, even more news for you. Get 2 months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free by signing up at Skillshare.com/news. You can say it too.
2 months free at Skillshare.com/news. Now at the same time, kind of.
Skillshare.com/news. Great.
We
did it.
Kind of.
Okay.
Welcome back from before. Hi.
Hi.
So we're having Ollie Thorne on the show in a moment to talk about Brexit-y kind of things and things of that nature.
And here that
and
is.
Here we go.
Okay, here we are today with Ollie from Philosophy Tube. Hi, Ollie.
Hello. It is a pleasure to be here with you two.
So thrilled to have you. We've been wanting to get you online at some point and chat with you about everything that's going on in your country.
Because oh, God.
Instead of us taking educated guesses.
Yeah, a fun little break.
A fun little break from our torrential news storm. But first off, how are you? How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. I've been busy. I'm working hard on my next video, which is going to be a light break. It's going to be about theater and art, and I'm actually going to be filming some of it in New York City.
Really?
Oh,
what
yes,
are you going to be
indeed.
Shooting that?
And I probably won't say exactly when I'm going to be there because I don't want people.
Sure.
You know, but I'm going to be there on the of February.
Where are you staying, though?
I'll be staying at a hotel.
Okay.
Fifth and Avenue.
So what we'll do is we'll give out all of your personal information after this. So if people want to find you, they
please,
can.
Please, yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, that'd be really good. That'd be ideal.
So there's lots of questions that we have, lots of stuff we want to talk to you about. But one thing that people may have already forgotten, because this has been a crazy week for us here in the States, is that Brexit has finally happened. after years. But okay, see, this is exactly the reaction I want. Tell us what's going on over there. Tell
has,
us.
Has it happened?
They took down the flag and everything, right?
Yeah, well, has it happened? Will it ever happen? What does it mean? Was it always already happening? Is it a state of mind? Is it an app? No one knows.
Has Brexit been in our heart all along?
The real Brexit was the enemies we've made with the rest of the world along the way. So the 31st of January came around, which was when Brexit was supposed to happen, and something happened, but not a lot really. So it's kind of, we've entered now what's being called the transitional period, right? And there's no, I try to always be like even-handed and neutral when I explain things on the channel, but there's no way I can think of to explain it that doesn't make it sound ridiculous. We've entered the transition period, which is where all the laws are exactly the same. We are still bound by all of the same laws that we were in. This is slightly complicated, we'll get to that later. But we now no longer have any say in what they are. So our, I think MEPs are now gone. They took down the flag in Brussels. We like no longer have a seat on the legislative bodies of the EU. So we are now bound by all of the same rules, and we now have no say in them at all. So we've taken back control of the country.
Yeah, that sounds like a great deal.
Independence, right?
Yeah, that's entirely, at the moment, it is entirely ceremonial. And of course, it's being claimed as a propaganda victory by those, notably the government, who are like, yes, we've finally delivered on Brexit. Yes, we promised we'd delivered on Brexit, and now we've Brexited. And it's like, we haven't really, though, have we? And I think everybody was hoping that we'd just sort of move on, but we can't. So the transition period lasts until the 31st of December, unless we extend it, which no one knows if we can.
I mean, this has been extended for so long, and like it's always been like, well, we're going to get a deal, we're not going to get a deal, we're going to do this, and it's been years and years and years.
Yes, so now we have till the 31st of December to come up with some kind of deal with someone. No one quite knows what that is. Boris Johnson's been like, absolutely stonking deal. All the deals will stonk all the time. And the EU is like, may not. but what is interesting is that because we have now, like, I'm doing big air quotes here, listeners, Brexited. A lot of people have taken that as license to just be like, well, now that we've, quote, done it, we can just, like, do whatever we want, right? So there was a hilarious bit of news where so in the transition, like a lot of fishing boats fish in the English Channel, as you might expect, not just from the UK but also from Europe as well, and it was supposed to be that in the transition period that could just like continue happening because you don't want to like throw all the rules out overnight, like, and whilst we wait to negotiate what the new rules will be about who can fish where, it's kind of business as usual until we sort it out. But the island of Guernsey, which is one of our islands in the Channel, just unilaterally declared that no French fishing boats were allowed within 12 miles of the island.
What?
They just did that. And then the French were like, mais nous avons besoin les poissons. Like, quoi le fuck are you doing? And the Guernsey was like, no more French fishing boats here. So there's been this.
But just
kind of,
the French
minor
fishing boats.
Yeah, yeah. This been kind of like a minor, like, pescatarian international incident. We've just been like, no more French fishing boats, and the French have just been like, well, you can't just like make shit up. But the people of Guernsey have just like, or the authorities of Guernsey have just like unilaterally declared no more fishing
what
boats.
Do they have against the French fishing boats?
I don't know. They're like now trying to take to court Neptune, king of the sea, on the grounds that like some of the fish might be French, and they're like inspecting the passports of crabs on the markets. They're like, no more French crabs.
Well, it's clear that they swam from France, so they're ours by right.
Yeah,
it seems
yeah.
like that's like a, it's like a very performative, just like the illusion of a victory. Like they're just like, well, at least we're, you know, we're in the transitional period. We can't do this. We can't do this. Well, you can't fish here anymore. And we won. Yeah. We did it. We got the Brexit.
It is that drill tweet of just like trying to beat a pigeon at chess. Well, it's not a drill tweet. It's just like the old saying of like try and beat a pigeon. You can try and beat a pigeon at chess, but ultimately it's just going to shit on the board and declare itself the winner. So that's been the kind of like slightly sort of comedy version of that. The sad version of that is obviously that now that we've Brexited, like, there's been increased reports of hate crimes and people being, like, on the tube and, like, now we've done it, like, you need to go home. And there were signs going up in council flats, I think, in an area of London that were just, like, you must only speak the Queen's English and, like, if you don't like it, go home. So there's been a lot, like, people have taken this as license to just kind of do whatever.
And do you see that, a sharp increase in that over the past few weeks, or is that something that you've seen a lot? Building up over the last few years?
Well, there were the reports that when we did have there was like a big spike in racial hate crimes after the initial referendum. I haven't seen any data on what it's been in the last couple of weeks. And it's obviously like, listeners, if you didn't know me already, I'm white, so racial hate crime is not something I generally see. So I can't like report authoritatively on that. But people are kind of taking it as a sort of license to do whatever, whether that's yell slurs in the street or just ban French fishing boats from coming near their island.
if that's the biggest thing out of Brexit that happens, well, I guess that some fears.
I mean, get rid of the hate crime part and like the fishing.
Even as I was saying that, I was like, well, not the hate crime part. I meant the fishing boat.
Sounds like maybe nationalism is a problem.
It seems like nationalism is the big problem that's coming out of this.
Yeah. Also, there have been some of interesting rules about whose nationalism is allowed, because your listeners may be aware that when we had the EU referendum, Scotland overwhelmingly voted to remain, so did Northern Ireland, but it was Wales and England that just kind of tipped it. So since then, the Scottish have been like, we really don't want this. We think this is a bad idea.
Yeah.
And they've already had one independence referendum, which I think narrowly went in favour of remaining part of the Union. But now there is talk of a second Scottish independence referendum. But, I mean, again, like, comedy, absolute clown country. Scotland have their own parliament called Holyrood, right? And if it's overwhelmingly dominated by the SNP, Scottish National Party, who are, like, a pretty they've got nationalists in the name of that, like, fairly centrist by UK standards. And if they pass a motion in the Scottish Parliament, then they can have a second independence referendum. But the Scottish Parliament cannot vote on whether to have a second referendum unless that passes in UK Parliament. The moment, they can't do, they can't have the power devolved to them to have an independence referendum unless UK Parliament says they can. And UK Parliament,
what a catch 22.
UK Parliament is like overwhelmingly dominated by the Tories now, who are our right wing party. The Scottish First Minister of Scotland wrote to Boris Johnson and was just like, "Can we please have permission to have a referendum?" And he was like, "Nope. No, you can't."
Wow. Yeah, that was absolutely, that was a big question for me, because when this, what's going to happen with Scotland? So what's the next step for them? Are they just kind of stuck?
Well, he can do that indefinitely. He doesn't.
Wow.
I mean, even if there was somehow a vote in the UK Parliament, the Tories would just bat it down. They've got like a majority of like 40 or 50. So he could for the next 5 years just like say no, in which time maybe a lot more people in Scotland are like, well, we hate the idea of Westminster telling us what to do. It's obviously a big propaganda victory for the SNP. Or maybe the people of Scotland just go, oh, bollocks to it. We can't be arsed with this stuff anymore. It's a fool's game to try and predict what the 2025 election ground will be like. But what some people are worried about is like, well, because our electoral system is so stacked in favour of the right-wing parties, maybe a left-wing party has to do a deal with the SNP come next election and say, we will allow you to have a second referendum if you form like a progressive coalition with us.
Then how does that affect you guys?
Yeah. If Scotland does go independent, I mean, you know, it's up to the people of Scotland to decide what they want to do, obviously. I was actually living in Scotland at the time of the first independence referendum, and because I've been living there so long, I got to vote in it. So I kind of got to know the issues quite well. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen in 2025?
Historically, Scotland has tried to get independence, correct? Like, when was the last time that there was, like, a movement from them to gain their independence?
I can't remember when the first independence referendum was. It was a good few years ago now. It was when I was still in uni. The SNP's, like, been cleaning up in elections since then, so.
Like South Carolina, they're always trying to secede.
Right.
Like every couple of years, like we'll try again, we'll do it.
Like California. Mm-hmm. What about Northern Ireland? Is there any rumblings from them that are they just going to be going along with this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not Northern Irish, and I'm not really been following Northern Ireland closely, but it's kind of a question mark, because I know that the Republic of Ireland has elections in 2 days at time of recording. So we'll kind of see what happens there. I was in the Republic of Ireland over New Year's, and a lot of people like know each other either side of the border. And I, the people I was hanging out with were like, yeah, all our Northern Irish friends are now like getting Republic of Ireland passports just in case.
Oh, yeah.
So there's talk of like maybe reunification.
The other big thing, cool.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's up to the people of Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland to decide what they want to do. And because of the Good Friday Agreement, the UK, mm-hmm. So I believe I'm right in saying, and if there are any Irish listeners, please write in and correct me. Please send your emails, your angry emails, to somemorenews@gmail.com. I believe that as part of the Good Friday Agreement, which is the everybody please stop killing each other piece of paper that we signed, then people on both sides of the border have the right to a binding referendum. And if they have that referendum and they vote to, say, United Ireland, then the UK like has to respect it.
Wow.
So there's talk of like, well, will we have that referendum? Will we not? Let's see what the Irish elections bring in. Let's also just see what the hell Brexit's going to mean for Ireland, because we've no idea. Like, nobody talked about it during the run-up to the vote, and almost like nobody's really addressed it since. But if we are going to have like a hard border with the EU, or we're going to have like different trading standards, then like, how are we going to do that? I mean, how are we going to have like, are we going to have like a militarized border across Ireland? Because that's like up there with don't invade Russia during winter. or are we going to have like separate rules for Northern Ireland than for mainland Britain, and have like like ferry terminals checking in, which everyone's like, no, you can't do that because you can't have like separate rules for one part of the country. Meanwhile, it's the Irish economy is like completely dependent on tax havens for Apple, and like house prices in Dublin are absolutely through the roof. So, yeah, no one knows what the hell's going to happen with Ireland. And Boris Johnson's just like, it'll be fine. We're going to do a stocking deal for Ireland, and we'll stock all the way, and they'll love it.
Yeah, it sounds like it'll just be deals. You just do deals and you figure it out, right?
Yeah, you deal and you figure it out. It's a while ago, somebody, Priti Patel, who's, I want to say, our defense secretary, she may not be, I can't remember what Priti Patel is, but she's one of the senior government figures, and she was just like, yeah, I wouldn't rule out sending troops to Northern Ireland, and everyone was like, oh, Jesus Christ, please,
you should rule that one thing out.
Yeah, please, if you're going to rule anything out, make it that. Oh, and also Boris Johnson was like, oh, we're going to change the law so that people can't bring lawsuits against the British Army for war crimes they committed in Northern Ireland. Like, they're going to change the law because like the British Army did some things in Northern Ireland, which maybe were not its finest hour, for which, you know, just like some people have yet to have their say on that. So they want to pass this new law that like prevents people from bringing quote vexatious suits against the British Army. If the British Army shot a bunch of unarmed civilians who were crawling away and wounded, they want to say the families can't sue us, it was in the past, forget it, we've talked about it.
This sounds good.
Yeah,
and
you gotta
healthy.
Preemptively stop accountability for war crimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they love that in Ireland. They're big fans of that in Ireland. Actually, when I was in the Republic over New Year, some friends there were telling me a story about how during the Troubles, the SAS, who are our like equivalent of Navy SEALs, they crossed the border from Northern Ireland into the Republic. Whereupon the Republic of Ireland police, who are not armed, stopped them and said, what do you think you're doing? You're carrying illegal firearms in the Republic of Ireland. You're all under arrest. And the SAS were like, jog on, no, we're not. And then the Irish police were just like, we've got the army here, so you can either surrender to us or you can surrender to them. And the SAS surrendered. They were all arrested and they were put on trial in Dublin for illegal firearm possession, at which point it caused an international incident because the British government were like, you're trying our SAS like publicly with like their names and pictures and stuff, please stop. And they were like, nope. So,
wow.
Yeah, like big balls on the Irish for that one. That was a while ago. So yeah, fingers crossed nothing like that happens again.
Man, there are just so many question marks surrounding this. How does that feel? Like, what's the psyche for people right now walking around? Like, to me, I don't know, do we just get used to it? But yeah, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know how this is going to affect your economy, just your way
badly.
Of life. And badly. Okay, that's the answer.
so you do know. Okay.
All forecasts are like, nope.
Yeah.
I guess in terms of like what the national mood is, it's very hard to say because like So I am from the north of England, but I live in London and have for a couple of years because it's where all the acting jobs are. And this is kind of hard to explain to people who aren't from the UK, but London is like a separate country than the rest of the UK. Whenever like American friends come over, they say, "Oh, like where should I go in the UK?" And I'm like, "Get out of London, like." Because it's yeah. it's like a separate, it is like a whole different place, like culturally and like economically, it's really weird that we have like all of our financial and cultural capital is like concentrated in this one city, so like the mood, the London, at least the very urban bits of London are like were I think fairly remain and like more left wing than a lot of the rural areas, so a lot of people in London are just like whatever. So yeah, it's hard to say what the national mood is. I think a lot of people, certainly in the general election we had, just like wanted Brexit to go away. They were just like, please. Yeah. I mean, the Tory slogan was "Get Brexit done," and it was like a hell of a good bit of politics from them. Like they won off the back of that. I think a lot of people were just like, please, just get it. I just don't want to think about it anymore. And I had friends who went out canvassing for various political parties and were just like, the number one message we get on the doorstep is people being like, just please go away. I don't want to think about it.
Yeah, they're sick of it.
Yeah. But unfortunately, it's not going to go away. As much as the government's been like, yes, we've done it. We've finally Brexit. It's like, we haven't though, have we?
So they voted. They vote for the Conservative Party because they want Brexit to go away. But they're also voting for it to stay around.
Yeah, it's going to be dragged out forever.
Well, and I certainly don't want to speak for the millions of people who like,
no, of course,
conservative in the country. So I can't, you know.
No, but I can.
No, go ahead. You can.
I will speak
for them.
Yeah. I'm digesting what you're saying, and I'm in interpreting. No. From what I've picked up and understand, there was a frustration with a lack of a specific plan from like the Labour Party, from Liberal Democrats or what have you.
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, the media message was that Labour was muddled on Brexit. I mean,
the media message, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that Labour's plan was we negotiate a deal and then we put that deal to the people in a second referendum. And that second referendum will be like, do you want this deal? Do you want a different deal? Or do you want to cancel the whole thing? Right. Yeah. So Labour went for this kind of compromise position in the election. And 2 years previously, their position was, we accept the result of the referendum and we want to work towards Brexit. So then the leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, was persuaded, because the Labour Party was like quite divided, both in terms of the membership and the kind of top levels. It was quite divided on should we remain or should we stay or should we go now? So he was persuaded to go from saying, yes, we accept the result and we work towards it, to let's have this compromise position of we've got a second referendum. And some people are like, that's what bit Labour in the ass, because people were like, oh, you know, he's wishy-washy or he's getting back on it. Even though it was like quite a nuanced position, it like that didn't go over all that well, and people ultimately right. wanted to get Brexit done more.
Yeah, it seems like that is actually generally a good idea to like bring an idea to the people.
We
made a deal. Do you want this deal? Yes or no? As opposed to like, just like get rid of it. Just do your thing.
It seems that maybe yeah. strength of convictions appeals to people in general. We see that, you know, we've got this awful president.
Sure.
He had strong convictions. He sticks to his gun, even if it's a lie. And people are drawn to that. People yeah. seem to be really drawn to Bernie Sanders right now. Strength of convictions. You have a message and you stick with it.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't want to paint all the people who voted Tory or who switched yeah. from Labour to Tory as been like, oh, they've been hypnotized by the Ubermensch yeah. Boris Johnson, like the strongman, the authoritarian strongman politics. I think, you know, I think a lot of people, certainly on the British left, underestimated the power of people just saying like, I just want it to go away, like I don't want to deal
yeah.
with it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, we could talk all day about how like the extremely right wing Tory owned media in our country did not help. There were also some like fairly concerning things from like the ostensibly neutral BBC during the election. Some like slightly worrying either mistakes or conspiracies or like functionally conspiracies. We could talk all day about that, but like at the end of the day, I think a lot of British voters, not unreasonably, decided I just want it to go away.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like the sort of thing you can just make go away. You can't just like burn some sage in your house and get rid of Brexit. It's like, we haven't really actually done any of the work. It's just
yeah.
like, yes, we've done it. It's like, yeah, you haven't.
Right.
Done,
it's
you know?
Years of saying over and over that we've done it. We did it. We're doing it. We're gonna do it. Okay, yeah. We did it, but you didn't actually do anything.
And now we have to have trade deals. We have to like renegotiate trade deals with the whole country. Meanwhile, also, there are some people who are just like in denial about this. I won't name names. But there are some like members of the British commentariat who are just like, no, I mean like first chance we get into power, we rejoin the EU. Like that's the first thing we do is like we get back in as soon as we can. Like we undo all of this and we could still make it go away.
We can fix this, guys.
Yeah, we could still like rejoin the EU immediately in 2025. And it's like, oh yeah, I look forward to every future election. I look forward to us like jumping in and out of the EU every 5 years, like doing a hokey cokey with an entire continent. Just like every election we like leave or return. And again, the French are just gonna be like, quoi le fuck? Où est le poisson? Donnez-moi le poisson.
I think there's gotta be, or maybe, I don't know, you would know, some amount.
What is Europe?
What is Europe?
Define
it for us.
Europe.
I was gonna say, I imagine there's got to be some amount of people who are less checked out, like more checked out from the news and everything. And they've heard Brexit talked about for a long time. It passed 3 years ago. Maybe on some level they're like, yeah, didn't that happen already? My life seems pretty much the same. It can't be that bad, you know?
And like, yeah, maybe that was part of the people who were like, just make it go away. Like, please stop talking about it. Like, just like, get it done.
So what other, do you have any other things that are going on over there that might have missed us that aren't on our radar that you think would be interesting or important for us to know about?
I don't know.
You don't have to have an answer, but
I don't know. I'm struggling to come up with anything. As I said before we started, like I've been so checked out of the news here that I was worried this podcast was just going to be you explaining my country's news to me. Fortunately, I know enough about like Guernsey fishing operations in Scotland to vamp for 20 minutes. but yeah, I mean, two of our royals maybe kind of resigned or maybe didn't.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, this is the question that like that this is something that I've been wondering. It's one of those amazing unanswerable questions of life, which is, had our general election returned a Labour government, would Harry and Meghan still have resigned?
Ooh.
There's no way of knowing, but I would love to peer into the crystal ball of possible worlds and see what would have happened.
That is a very good question.
Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
If that would have been the
enough.
It's a little thing that Meghan needed to stay and feel at home.
Yeah. So, I mean, viewers of my show will know that I'm one of the millions of people in the UK who thinks that we should not have a monarchy. We are out there. There's actually quite a lot of us. You know, no disrespect, but I just don't think it's a good way to have a country.
Certainly not disrespecting me.
No. America's like rapidly approaching having a king, isn't it? So
wild. Right, we spent so many lives and so many resources on like rebelling against kings, but then we just renamed it.
Yeah.
Like, well, what if kings actually?
What if the word is longer?
Our president yesterday tweeted something real great that insinuates Trump being in office for many decades.
He's always joking about that. It's fun.
But yeah, tell us about why the monarchy is bad.
Well, I think it is, but from your
perspective, this is a big disclaimer across the board for the whole conversation. This is one man's perspective.
Well, I think the British monarchy kind of stops us from knowing who our real friends are. I think it's kind of used as a sort of celebrity distraction, really, from real issues. In addition to being like a massive expense, I think it's very easy for people like, you know, Boris Johnson to wave a union flag and stand, you know, next to a member of the royal family, and everyone goes, oh, look, like he's just like us. And it's like, no, actually, you know, the interests of the people running the country are actually fundamentally opposed to the majority. From certain ways of looking at it. But yes, two of our royals, quote, stepped back. I'm not sure it's clear quite what that means.
Doing appearances?
They're going to be independently wealthy, you guys.
They are going to be, yeah. There was some talk that they might launch a luxury fashion brand called Sussex Royal, although they haven't like patented cosmetics and stuff, or they might just do like philanthropy. I'm sure they're not going to be signing on to the dole. I'm sure they'll be fine. It's not, I don't think, clear, or at least it's not clear to me. I mean, like you say, they might not be doing like royal appearances and stuff, but I don't know whether Harry has now abdicated. I think if all the other royals are killed in a jet, right. I don't know whether, like, I mean, I'm sure if that happened.
Right, he might be stuck be like, still. Yeah, yeah.
Well, if that did happen, I'm sure they'd just go to him and be like, kid, would you mind? Like, whatever the law, we'll just make whatever law we need.
Right.
But I'm not sure whether it's clear whether he's actually, like, abdicated his claim to the throne. I mean, obviously, he was never going to come out and say, I hate the royal family and we shouldn't have it.
Right, like, right.
He's not going to, like, slag off his grandma like that. But, yeah, two of them just decided bollocks to it after, you know, years of like racism in the media against Meghan.
Yeah. I mean, I even over here when I the stuff that I read, I mean, there's far more supportive pieces on Meghan Markle in the States, I would assume, than over there. But even at that, it's shocking to me the way people have reacted to her. I guess it shouldn't be shocking at all, but it's gross. And I can't imagine, it must be much worse over there.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, shocked but not surprised, I suppose, you know. It's
pretty much business as usual. Well, I feel like the labor question, I feel like the answer is no, because it seems to be more based off of the media and how they treat her as opposed to, like,
you know, the
who's what, you know, what party's in power.
We've been doing this for a couple years.
You know, go ahead.
Oh, no, it all comes back. The media.
Yeah, I mean,
which we are both, all of us are a part of. But
can you imagine what the British Tory-owned media would have done if Corbyn had got in? They would have been aneurysms on Fleet Street. Maybe they would have actually laid off Meghan for once because they'd have been too busy absolutely grilling the jam grandpa.
Yeah, the blood would be pouring out of their eyes, so they'd have something else to deal with.
Yeah, we're watching a bit of a meltdown here.
Yes,
it's getting pretty beautiful.
Just like the editor of the Daily Express, just like sand pouring from his ears and eyes, just like on television, just like, it's like skin peels off like the Nazis in Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
It would have been beautiful, alas.
You mentioned the monarchy and the expense of it, and people always talk about the cost on taxpayers. Is there some element of it that generates revenue? Because I just keep coming back to, what are the arguments for keeping it outside of tradition and everything? And I know that they own a lot of land, right?
They do, but I mean, you know, people only own people can own land and then until suddenly they don't, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm just trying to,
you know, there are people in,
figure
people
it
in
out.
East Kensington who take land.
There are people in East Kensington who own their land and had it taken off them so their houses could be bulldozed and build a shopping centre. So
there you go.
Yeah. So one of the arguments, which I believe I'm correct in saying is false, is that they bring in a lot of money from tourism. I think that's actually not true, because whenever people say that, they fail to account for the royal security bill, which is paid for by the taxpayer and is substantial. So even though every now and again they get there, they're like, oh, the Queen's taken a pay cut this year. She's only making several million instead of like Godzilla levels of money. I think a lot of people fail to take into account the security bill, which is in the tens of millions. And my video and my research that I made about the royal family was more about the kind of ideological position than the financial cost. Your viewers may know Sean, who's another YouTuber who made a great video on the numbers of the royal family.
What's going on with Prince Andrew?
He's been laying low.
Has he?
Why?
I need to be very careful. We're entering potentially libelous territory. Prince Andrew, who was friends with Jeffrey Epstein, did a famously or infamously disastrous interview in which he was questioned about his former friendships, and then kind of laid low. The Queen cancelled his official birthday party.
That's a rough, rough. The Queen cancels your birthday?
Your mum cancels your birthday because you've been accused of paedophilia and sex crimes.
Because he's been a bad
allegedly,
boy.
Allegedly been a bad boy. The Metropolitan Police are kicking down my door as we speak. There was a famous bit in that interview where there was an account of a girl who I believe was a teenager at the time who was like, oh, Prince Andrew came up to me in a nightclub and was like grinding on me and like tried to like do things to me in the bathroom and was like sweating all over me. And the interviewer was just like, what do you say to this? And his response was that he does not sweat because of a medical condition he developed during the Falklands War. He was like, I don't sweat, so that couldn't have been me. And it's like, okay, that's a normal, like
you
a
don't
normal
sweat?
Thing. Yeah, when like a 16-year-old accuses you of like being inappropriate, your first response is, well, actually, I don't sweat.
Right, that's your like that's your defense. Like, what about the other stuff? Maybe you just say like, I wouldn't do that.
He doesn't sweat as beads of sweat drip down his face.
Allegedly drip down his face.
Allegedly. And honestly, allegedly, it was his face, you know.
Yeah, we don't allegedly know for it was sure. His face. They may have been dripping down someone else's face. And they're
we don't know. We don't know.
Real tame punishment. I like that.
But yeah,
he comes to my birthday party.
So, yeah, well, there was a lot of people were very upset because when Harry and Meghan announced their decision to, quote, step back, the palace issued a statement saying they were disappointed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were like, well, you weren't disappointed when your son was accused of sex crimes. But like, yeah, a lot of people pay exacting attention to the precise words that the Queen does not use because it's written for her by someone else. But people pay like very close attention to those words. There are some people in the UK who believe that, like, the Queen sends coded messages in the jewellery that she wears.
Oh, like, you've got that too.
Yeah,
that's like
yeah,
some QAnon like,
oh,
stuff.
Oh, she wore, like, the brooch with the blue brooch with the stars on it, which is, like, looks kind of like the EU flag if you squint and turn around.
Come
like,
on.
She's sending secret pro-EU messages. And it's like, well, suppose that she is. What does it actually change? Nothing. Suppose that she is like secretly snubbing Boris Johnson by wearing a ruby brooch instead of a sapphire one. It's like, well done. I'm sure that
actually,
he picks up on that and it makes a difference to people's
even
lives.
Even if she was, that's honestly very depressing to me that that's her version of speaking out. And like, that's the only power. Like, I mean.
Yeah, I don't want to like put too much pressure on her, but you're the queen.
Oh, she legally can't.
She legally
cannot have a political like opinion publicly. The monarch is forbidden from doing that, which is why a few years ago, Prince Charles, who is the heir apparent, got in a bit of trouble because it emerged that he had been sending letters to government ministers, and people were questioning like, well, you know, if he becomes king, is he going to remain politically neutral as the monarch is required to do?
Get rid of it all.
So frustrating for somebody in that position, but also you get to be the king.
Imagine it comes with some pros. Like,
but also, like, you weren't elected. You're not speaking for these people.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, true. So
wearing brooches for the people, though.
You can wear your brooch for the people.
Can you imagine if Donald Trump came back to the U.S. after a state visit here, then was just like, you know what, I was so shocked by what the Queen... by the jewelry that she wore, and I immediately picked up on what she was saying, so I've decided to change a lot of my policy positions. Mm-hmm. Like, that sounds like a thing that will realistically happen.
Honestly.
Yeah, not only did I notice, but it also changed my mind.
Yeah.
That's what it took. I'd be into it. I don't know.
Well, like, I think a lot of the stuff about the Harry and Meghan thing, and also about Brexit, is like, ties into the fact that we have a 24-hour news cycle, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of, like, hashtag content that just like gets written. People like, well, oh, write an article about the Queen and their jewelry, and people will click on it, and it's like... Yeah, I mean, we could spend all day
getting
angry.
They're right, they do.
Yeah. Yeah, we could spend all day like getting angry about the inane things that the media comments on, but like we've all, whomst among us has not posted hashtag content?
I mean, yeah, sure. we have the same thing with the secret meanings behind the president's typos in his tweets.
Yeah.
He's got to write about something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to write about something. Got to get that content out. Got to get them clicks, yeah.
This is a stupid question.
No,
when I was in Ireland a couple years ago and befriended a bunch of lovely people, and we were talking about The Crown, and they were all the people that I befriended.
Do you mean the TV series or the
Blues TV Blues. Series?
Right.
The TV series. Well, both. And,
never seen it.
Okay, that's where I was getting to, because their perception was like, yeah, I hated the monarchy, but now I'm kind of into it because I really like Claire Foy. And I'm really coming around on Queen Elizabeth after seeing this show.
That's why people like them, because they're celebrities and we talk them up. And so they're the kind of celebrities that like that people like don't enjoy seeing torn down but always build up. And basically the monarchy is like Love Island for people who read The Guardian.
I think that we should probably wrap this up, but it's been lovely and we would love to have you come back on sometimes as things, you know... change if news big stories break at all.
Yes, yeah. The more they change, the more they stay the same. If anything does ever happen with Brexit, I'll come back on another 50 years and explain to you what happened.
We would love that. Before
as
we go,
cast in the United Kingdom of England, and that's it.
That's the one. Yeah.
You are in a play.
I am.
Is that right?
I am.
You want to tell
play.
Us a little bit about that?
When does this come out?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow, okay. Yes, I am in a play. I am going to be playing Count Dracula, in so an immersive theatrical production of Dracula.
What does that mean, immersive?
Immersive means that you'll be able to choose which characters you follow, and you'll be able to wander through the performance space. Different scenes will be going on simultaneously, so it's very much in the vein of like, well, who do you want to listen to? Who do you believe?
Yeah.
You can't see all the scenes, so you're going to have to pick and choose.
Did you ever see Sleep No More in New York? I didn't, but I know that that's similar kind of a setup.
I know of it. If I find the time when I am in New York on February, then I will go and see it. Also, if
how
I can
do people
come up with Hesner dollars.
How do people, if any of our listeners, well, we've got listeners that live over there, but some of them might be traveling. How can they get tickets to your show?
If you Google immersive Dracula, then you will find it. And it's on my Twitter and everything. So yeah, there are still tickets available. It is 2/3 gone. All the VIP tickets are sold out, and we have only just started rehearsal like last
week. That's wild.
Yeah, power of YouTube, baby. Yeah.
Is there a lot of acting work in London?
Oh God. Yes and no. So this is an interesting diversion and a bit of a preview of some stuff that might be in my next video. So rent is so high in London and wages are so low that nobody can afford to become an assistant to an agent or a casting director. So as a consequence, all the agents and casting directors in London work about 60-hour weeks, and they don't have time to see anybody new. So they only cast people that they know. So right now, the industry is just like frozen in this pyramid shape, and nobody can move up. So yes, there is acting work, but no, you cannot have any of it. The only solution...
So congratulations on this job, then.
Thank you. Yeah, the only solution is to make your own work. So get together with a couple of friends and decide we want to do Dracula and put it on in an abandoned metalworks that's also a goth nightclub, which is what we've done. So yes, if you Google immersive Dracula, you'll be able to find it. And it'll be a lot of fun. And otherwise, I am at Philosophy Tube on YouTube, which is where I do my weird show.
You guys should definitely check it out because he does incredible work. We're big fans.
I do work
here.
Anyway.
You do. You make it work.
I have made content.
Yes, I have made content. I've posted it online.
Yeah. I've been in the posting wars.
Yes.
Ollie, this has been wonderful. We're really grateful for you taking the time out of your evening to chat with us.
My pleasure. Thank you very, very much for having me.
All right, guys, that about does it for us today. Thanks again to Ollie for joining us. Mm-hmm.
And thanks again to all of you for listening.
That was really good.
Uh-huh.
Totally
Thank
beautiful.
You. Thank you.
One more quick thing. We love you very much.
Bye.